Welcome to Everybody Knows What You Did Last Summer.
A queer exploration of the classic movie, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I've watched so many things with Jennifer Love Hewitt in them.
And your other host, Elsia123, aka Vina. A proud member of the Church of Sarah Michelle Gellar. I mean, just what a pro. What a pro.
So this is kind of, I'm sure a lot of people have already seen this movie, but wow, what a cast. This is, you know, kind of a prototypical slasher movie. And it was sort of like what Scream did for horror movies, where it was like, ironic and self-referential and also a really, you know, good movie. This was for like just a basic slasher movie. I guess Scream is like a slasher movie too, but I don't know. What do you think are the differences between a movie like this and a movie like Scream?
Well, I'm so glad you bring that up because that's something I wanted to talk about. Both movies are written by Kevin Williamson. Was Scream was before this or after this?
I believe it was after this.
That makes sense because this movie feels like the movie you write to get to Scream. I think that, I mean, obviously Scream has Wes Craven as director, so that gives it like a little bit higher, you know, horror caliber. By the way, we're doing this movie because this is like the quintessential like end of summer movie. It's actually a 4th of July movie,
oh,
but like
I am wrong. Scream was in 1996 and I Know What You Did Last Summer was 1997. Although it could be like a weird thing with the release dates, but
sure, where it was written.
But they were around the same time. I think this one was probably written before Scream, if I had to say.
Feels like it was. I'm gonna accept that as the true headcanon of life. Yeah, we're doing this movie because it's, you know, we're here at the end of summer, global warming be damned, and this is like such a summery movie, and I think that what makes this movie, in my mind, lesser than Scream, because I think Scream is one of my favorite movies, not just of this genre, but like ever. And I think that what makes this movie less is, first of all, you don't have Neve Campbell at the helm. You have Jennifer Love Hewitt, who I think is good in this movie, but like she's not bringing the Neve Campbell energy.
She's like the poor man's Neve Campbell, essentially.
She is. And I mean, this is, we're all swimming in the waters of like Party of Five and Cruel Intentions. And like, it's the same, it was just the same like 10 actors being remixed in these different movies. But I think that there's the self-awareness of Scream. I also think a thing that Scream does is like, it's a true whodunit. And it also kind of pretends that adults don't exist, which I think is a good call in this genre. To me, one of the weakest parts of I Know What You Did Last Summer is the reveal of the killer, because he's just like the dad of the main guy. And we've never like met this guy before. There's not a big like he pulls off the slicker and it's Freddie Prinze Jr., you know. Whereas you have in Scream, like, the incredibly satisfying ending with Billy and Stu. So I think that this movie lacks some of the bite. It's very entertaining, but it is, it doesn't, like, make you think about the genre in the same way that I think Scream does. What would you say are the differences?
Okay, so I just want to say that I was Googling while we were discussing which movie came first, and it says that I Know What You Did Last Summer was a screenplay written by Kevin Williamson several years beforehand, which was then rushed into production by Columbia Pictures after Scream became such a big success. So
gotcha.
Our instinct on it, I think, was correct.
Yeah,
so I think that Scream, like, it's one of those things where, like, with writing, a thing that you hear sometimes, like, you know, in a college comp class would be, like, you know, you have to, like, learn you have to learn certain conventions of writing in order to unlearn them. And sure. It feels like I Know What You Did Last Summer is like you have to learn to write this movie in order to unlearn it and create something like Scream. You have to do one that's kind of a by the book, you know, sort of slasher film in order to write the more high concept send up of the genre while being like an homage to the genre and firmly within the genre like Scream.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, Scream is, you know, such a meta movie. Even the inclusion of the Gale Weathers character is like, you know, commenting on the action as it's happening. In this way that I think this movie is much more insular. We're just sort of in this town. Even the town itself feels much smaller. The world feels a lot tinier. It's like a fishing town. It's like a movie about clam bakes. It's a very interesting place to set a slasher. There's like we're surrounded by water. Everybody's in big slickers and galoshes, and there's just sort of big cliffs everywhere.
Okay. I do want to talk a little bit about the town. In the context of, like, it being a Rosewood-type place.
Sure.
Because I've seen this movie. I saw it when it came out. I saw it within the last couple of years. And then when we talked about talking about it tonight, I read the Wikipedia page, and then I wound up watching the movie again because I was like, yeah, I want to have it fresh in my mind. But it was not until, despite having seen the movie two times previously, it was not until I read the Wikipedia page. Vina, what state does this movie take place in?
New Hampshire?
Okay, right. It has, like, a super New England feel about it, because it's, like, all these rocky cliffs, everybody is, like, fishing boats, like, all of this stuff is happening. I read on Wikipedia, and then when I watched it today, I kept cracking up. It is set in South Carolina. It is Southampton, South Carolina.
Really?
This fictional place. Yeah, which is hilarious because as a Rosewood-type town, this town has no temperature, despite the fact that it is the 4th of July, and it's like, so the middle of summer, like high summer, very hot time of the year. Everyone is wearing all these like wet fisherman oilskin slickers, and they're having this big parade where everyone is wearing like giant fish on their head, and I feel like the town, like I don't know why they had it be set in South Carolina, because the town feels really New England. Everything is kind of like, the sets are all kind of like shitty in the way of like, this town has just been here for hundreds of years and has been battered by the salt spray of the ocean.
Yeah,
like, that totally is the feel of it. Plus, like, the cliffs and the rocky shores, it's very different from like Myrtle Beach, for example, an area of the water that like is in South Carolina. But yeah, so it's like a temperatureless town, and it's also like, it's also similar to like Buffy, where there are the docks where Faith and Buffy are fighting, though there are like, you know, sometimes there are docks, sometimes there's just a giant cliff, like sometimes you're at sea level, sometimes you're really far above it. So yeah, lots and lots of things going on here in Southampton, which to me feels very, very Rosewood. Like, it's a town out of time and place that exists just for this particular mystery.
I don't think there's a single like Southern accent either. Like, if anything, I feel like people are kind of doing like Maine drawls a little bit.
I'm telling you, it is allegedly set in South Carolina.
Okay, while we're talking about the like sort of uncanny valley of this world, can we spend a moment to just talk about the names of the four teenagers? So
we spent about 2 minutes making names for these teenagers, I think.
So here's the thing, is like, this, you know, this movie is set in 1996. Like, these are supposed to be teens in 1996. These are the names of them. Julie James is Jennifer Love Hewitt. That's probably the least offensive name. It's not very exciting, but it's just, you know, whatever, its name. Then you have Sarah Michelle Gellar as Helen Shivers, Ryan Phillippe is Barry Cox, and Freddie Prinze Jr. is Ray Bronson. These sound like people who would be playing shuffleboard, you know, down at the old folks' home in 1996, more than they are like the young, hot teens. Also, Sarah Michelle Gellar's older sister is inexplicably named Elsa.
Elsa,
which doesn't make much sense. And then to go with even more into the name thing, I believe in the second movie, so the fisherman is Ben Willis.
Yes.
And I think in the second movie, the guy who ends up being the killer is Will Benson, Will Ben's son.
Yes, correct.
Which is so stupid. I also think that Anne Hesh's character, Missy, feels like a Rosewood character to me.
Yes, and I think she feels like a Ravenswood character. Like, she lives just far enough out of town to be in Ravenswood. Anne H., R.I.P., to, you know, queer actress. But yeah, her character is great. She's doing, like, taxidermy and butchering on her property.
Yes.
Very, very Ravenswood.
Well, it kind of has that Ravenswood Rosewood thing where the character I was thinking of is the mask maker. This movie has that quality where, like, there's, because it's like, it's a bad whodunit in the sense that it's a whodunit where the person who done it is a person we've never met, which is like, that's not good writing. But like, it's a thing where a bunch of characters just have to seem really spooky and weird because, you know, we're supposed to be suspicious of them. So, like, there's a lot of, like, weird shots of Elsa just kind of, like, staring after Sarah Michelle Gellar or, like, saying something kind of suspiciously. Johnny Galecki is in this movie as just, like, the town weirdo who gets killed pretty quickly. So it's very much a thing of, like, we're just trying to make everybody in this town seem a little bit off to throw off the audience.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like another PLL parallel is this, like, this bad blood between Helen and her sister Elsa that is never really explored very much. And it has a very, like, Melissa Spencer kind of a feel to it.
I would agree. And, you know, one thing that I find kind of interesting is, like, probably the biggest comparison to PLL is this idea of, like, the movie starts and it's like this group of teenagers who did something bad. And then they're being haunted by this, like, omniscient character who's, like, sending them messages about what they did last summer, which is, like, essentially the plot of, like, the first season of PLL, right? I don't know. How do we think that this particular crime compares to the Jenna thing?
Ooh. Well, I think that this crime is definitely worse than the Jenna thing. I think that this crime, like, this crime is interesting because it has, like, a lot of different components. Like, it has the car accident where they hit this guy on the side of the road. Then they decide they're going to cover it up. They're going to, you know, like, throw the body in the water. Then it turns out he's alive at the last moment and they fling him in anyway. So then it actually, like, is a murder. Like, their intent is to kill this guy in that moment.
Right. And there's, like, some clever bits with, like, Ryan Phillippe pretending to be sick because Johnny Galecki comes up and that's supposed to be a spooky moment. And then the movie does something kind of interesting where it, like, cuts forward in time. And when we kind of had met this group of teens, it's like, they're on top of the world. They're never going to die. And we meet them again. And it's like, yeah, nobody's life is, like, going awesome. Everybody's, like, kind of not doing their best. Jennifer Love Hewitt is, like, haunted. She's hashtag haunted by what they've done. Sarah Michelle Gellar is just, like, working at a department store. Freddie Prinze Jr. is just, like, off at the collecting clams or whatever.
Yes, and he's a fisherman.
He's a fisherman. The reason that I say collecting clams is We Hate Movies covered one of these movies at one point, and they have a joke about how he's constantly pestering Jennifer Love Hewitt to go to the clam bake. And they say it like that every time. So I always think of him in the clams. And then Ryan Phillippe is like a functioning alcoholic, essentially. Like, he's just, he's struggling.
Well, you get, like, there are class differences that are sometimes present and sometimes not present in this movie. Like, there's an issue where, like, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character, Ray Bronson, on shuffleboard, Ray is, like, not of the same social class that Helen Shivers, whose family owns the department store, is, and she's dating Barry, and we don't really know what the deal is with Barry, but his family seems pretty rich. And then Julie, she's dating Ray, so it seems like she's maybe a little closer to his level, but we hear that she's going to a fancy college on a scholarship and is going to be a lawyer. So it seems like, and when they get into the accident, Ray is the one who's actually driving. And he says, like, I don't have the money, I don't have the resources that you guys do. Similar to Hannah Marin when they're getting rid of the files, saying, like, you know, I don't have a bunch of rich lawyer parents who are going to help get me out of this. So there are, like, these class differences that are present in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the idea, like, one of the reasons that suspicion falls really hard on Ray is that he is a fisherman, and it's, like, this fisherman that's stalking them. But in terms of, like, whose life is going okay, I feel like Barry, because his family has the most money, even though he's a functioning alcoholic, his life seems to be going the most okay. Like, he is playing football at whatever college. He might even go to the same college that Julie goes to. It's kind of unclear. But it seems like his life is going, you know, it's the most on course of the four.
Sure, sure. I think Freddie Prinze Jr. is also suspected of potentially being bad because, like, he just has no emotion in the way that he acts. Just, like, very blank and very, Freddie Prinze Jr. seems like a great guy. I love that he and Sarah Michelle Gellar have been married forever. He's not great. He's not great in this movie.
Well, you know, he always seems surprised. Like, the look that he is best able to make with his face reads as surprised. So in some ways, that's good. You're in a horror movie. There are a lot of surprises of, like, oh, this person is dead. This person is being murdered. But, like, after you have determined who the hook hand is and you're fighting on his boat, it is a little much to continue looking surprised every time Hook Hand shows up.
Just a little bit. Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, we get this kind of, this very, again, very PLL thing of, like, they start getting these messages, I Know What You Did Last Summer, which, just the phrase itself, very queer, very gay, right? Like, I know what you did last summer. Well, what did you do last summer? What did Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sarah Michelle Gellar get up to last summer? That's the movie I want to watch.
Was it cruel for the summer? Was it cool for the summer? Like, what are we talking here?
Exactly. What was happening in the summer? But yeah, and a PLL, very PLL thing that happens is that Sarah Michelle Gellar, who's kind of painted as, like, the vain girl, she gets all of her hair cut off, much like Aria in The Dollhouse. She's also the croaker queen, which is, like, the town beauty queen. And they spend a lot of time, much more time than I had remembered from the first time I watched this movie, like, dealing with, like, the ins and outs and the politics of, like, being the croaker queen.
Well, I also have a lot of questions about the croaker celebrations. One, we know that it is the 4th of July, and, like, furthering that this is a Rosewood town that exists out of space and time, in July, the 4th of July, here in Ohio, it does not get dark until, like, 10 p.m. That is the first time it is dark enough to really have fireworks. However, every time the Croaker Queen pageant is over, it is the middle of the night. How late is this pageant going? And, scheduled like this. Also, we learn that when she has to be in the pageant as the reigning Croaker Queen, planning to like turn her crown and I don't know Croaker scepter over to whoever is going to be the next queen, that parade starts at 10 a.m. because her sister needs her to be at the store at 10 a.m. Well, the parade is at 10 a.m. So the parade through to the pageant is like a 12-hour spectacle. And then, like, spoiler alert, then later there's going to be another parade. Or does the parade just go on all day? This town isn't very big. Do they just march around in a giant circle for like 14 hours to set some kind of record? What's happening?
Well, the other thing that I think is very fun is that, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar at once seems to, like, detest being the Croaker Queen and take it very, very seriously.
I think she loves being the Croaker Queen.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun element, you know, and this is several years before Cruel Intentions, but I feel like the seeds of that character are here. And you know, how interesting for her and Ryan Phillippe to reunite in that film.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is when the movie starts, like she's crowned Croaker Queen, like the night of the initial incident, like the night of they're going to throw this guy into the water. So when it first happens, it's like the launching point for her. Like she's Croaker Queen, and then she's going to go to New York and she's going to be an actress, and then she's going to marry, she's going to marry Barry Cox, and he's going to be a professional football player. They're going to have three children. Everything is going to be so great. So she sees it in the beginning as her launching pad. But then a year later, like things have changed. She went to New York. Yeah. It didn't work out. She's back home. She's working at her family's department store. And by the time it comes around again, it's like she realizes that it is possible that was actually her peak and she hit it a year ago. Like,
yeah, so
it's a rough time.
Well, so it's interesting that like we're this far in, we've barely touched on Jennifer Love Hewitt's character. And I think that there's an interesting thing here where like, there's this way in which Sarah Michelle Gellar feels like she should be the final girl, and she isn't. It's Julie, who's a less interesting character, though often the final girls are less interesting characters. But it was making me think about, who do you feel is the final girl of PLL?
Ooh, that is so interesting. It's all of them. It's got to be all of them or none of them. I want to say, if I had to pick just one, I think I want to say Spencer.
Interesting.
But I feel like the argument can be made for all of them. Like Allison is sort of the ultimate survivor.
Yeah.
Hannah, do not fucking mess with Hannah. I don't know. I think all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I like that answer a lot. It's funny because when I said that, my immediate thought was Hannah. It's Hannah. And maybe that's just because, like, I would love to see, a younger Ashley Benson in this kind of role. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting idea. And, you know, Scream does something where it's like you have multiple final girls because you have Sydney, but you also have Gale, and then for a while you have Dewey, who's the final boy, final cop. But this does a very like straightforward version of that, you know. Mm-hmm. Sarah Michelle Gellar also probably gets the best death in the movie. It's like the most drawn out.
Yeah, I think that a couple of things happen. Like the stakes originally, in the setup, like before they get into the accident that turns into the murder, they're on the beach, and you see that like Helen and Barry are the horny teens, and they're like drinking. They're the unvirtuous teens.
How in the world can characters named Helen and Barry be the horny teens?
Nonetheless, they are.
They somehow are.
Well, his last name is Cox, so.
Okay, there you go.
Cox and are, you know, getting it on the beach. And whereas, like, and they're, like, they're drinking and stuff, and she's being, like, all flirty and seductive. Whereas, whereas Ray and Julie are off playing shuffleboard in the sand, and, like, when they start to make out, like, there's a moment where he's like, are you sure? And she's like, yes. And so you get the idea that, like, you know, they maybe have not had said, they're the virtuous teens. They're not right. drunk. They're, like, you know, monogamous. They're, like, not, they're not these sloppy, horny teens. So you, it definitely sets up the fact that, like, the virtuous teens are going to survive much longer than the unvirtuous teens. And that, sure. that plays out. Like, the two who eventually throw Ben into the water are Barry and Helen.
Yes. Yes. Although a detail that I feel is brushed over a little too quickly is that, like, Barry, correct me if I'm wrong, because I watched this movie a couple weeks ago, but that, like, Barry apparently, like, seduced Missy to get more information.
Oh, no, Ray. Ray had become involved with Missy.
Ray had become involved with Missy, which is, like, even kind of weirder.
Yeah, it's, like, unknown whether he did it to get more information or whether he, like, was going to, like, pay his respects about the guy that they killed, and then, like, one thing led to another, but... Yeah, he was involved with Anne H.'s character, which does, it does feel a little weird. And also with the bad names, the fake name that he used when he was dating Missy was Billy Blue, which everyone in the movie takes that seriously as if it could actually be a person's name, which sure, okay, I'm sure there are people named Billy Blue out there in the world, but... Even in the weirdly named world of this movie, it's just like, that is so obviously a fake name. Come on.
You also can't have another character named Billy after Scream. You know?
Plus, like, what did we say Julie's last name is? It's like Julie Jones?
I think it's James.
Julie James. So we have Julie James, who's dating Ray, aka Billy Blue. Like, that's way too many... That's way too many alliterative names for one movie.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, it's... And the two of them as a couple, like, he is such a zero, and it was interesting because, like, they do the misdirect for a little bit where you think that he's the bad guy. And I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, it's sort of the Scream thing, you know, there's always some bullshit reason to kill your girlfriend, like... Where it's, there's kind of the inherent, like, the fact that he is a man means that, like, there's a chance that he's probably going to kill you. Like, that's just kind of a given that you have to accept, which I think is really interesting in these Kevin Williamson scripts, because, you know, Kevin Williamson is a gay man, and there's often this kind of queer subtext, sort of, queer interpretation of the patriarchy, I think, in, you know, covertly in these films.
So, yes, I agree. And I think, you know, we've talked about, like, sort of the weak part of this film is the killer. Like, I mean, you know, the omniscient stalker, yes, great. The hook, yes, great, fine.
Yeah.
But the reveal that it's, like, not really anybody that you have a pre-existing connection to, is a little bit lackluster. I do think it would have been a more interesting choice if it had been Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character.
Yeah.
If it had been Barry, if it had been, like, you know, Julie having, like, a psychotic break of some kind, if it had been, like, Elsa, if she had had some connection to,
sure,
to the guy. I think there are a lot of more interesting choices. And one of them that I was thinking about it watching it this time, I was thinking about in Scream, where, like, one of the things that happens is, like, you see Billy get killed. And so you're like, oh, and he's like, do you believe me now? Like, a great fake death line.
Yeah.
However, gaslighting
right till the end. Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, Matt. It would be great if, like, Max's death was a fake out here, especially because I believe I read, like, in an interview or maybe on the Wikipedia, like, Max's death was filmed after the movie had been completed. Like, they decided they needed to raise the stakes sooner, and so they filmed that, like, they filmed that later and put it in.
Oh, that's really interesting. I wonder if there was a version of the script where he was the killer, because it feels... I mean, it sort of feels like the equivalent of, like, having Randy be the killer in Scream, but I think it would have actually worked pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would have been too obvious, but at least it would have been a character that we know, you know?
Yeah, well, because otherwise you would spend kind of the first, like, half of the movie and, like, Barry gets, you know, messed up by his car and, you know, Helen gets her hair cut. And you don't really get a sense of, like, the murderous intent until, like, a little bit later. So, yeah, they went back and they put in Max getting filleted.
Interesting.
Because when you think about it, like, what motive does Ben have to kill Max? Like, he just drove by.
Yeah, he was, I mean, I guess he didn't intervene, but, like... Yeah, it's, I mean, that's the thing. When you have a killer who isn't really a character earlier in the movie, all the things like motives and all of that, like, they kind of get stripped away, and it just becomes less interesting, I think.
Well, yeah, but I think what they're trying for is they're trying for a very PLL Jenna's character twist, because it turns out the person who they tried to murder was himself a murderer. He had just killed David Egan when they happened to run him over on the road. So it makes them less culpable for what they did in the moral universe of this movie if he himself was, like, a much worse person than they can feel that they are.
And much like the liars never owning up to killing Jenna or to blinding Jenna, let's see, Ray, God, these stupid names, Ray and Julie never own up to what they
No, they have in. no idea why this guy, like, has two of their friends dead on ice on his fishing boat and was attacking them so brutally. No idea at all.
So weird how that happened. Just bizarre. God. Yeah, it's really interesting. One of the things I do love about this movie is, like, it's very 90s. The cast obviously is very 90s. The fashion is very 90s. It feels like it just, you know, is existing kind of in the heart of all of that. And it was making me think about, like, what a 90s PLL would be like.
Oh my goodness. That would I think that would be so amazing, because this is a movie, like, it was written in the time before cell phones were a thing. So I feel like that would... You wind up with many more creative types of A hijinks. The body in the trunk that disappears, the murder in the balcony that, like, is immediately cleaned up. You know, like, you wind up having to get, like, way more creative than just text messages. And there's, like, an ominous nature to notes. Like, someone had to, like, be there and leave it in person, you know?
I don't have a full cast drawn up here, but I feel like Sarah Michelle Gellar as Hannah and Neve Campbell as Spencer feels really right to me.
Oh my God, a dream true. Especially since we're both, like, Spana people. That would really be.
That'd be really fun.
That would be pretty fantastic. I'm trying to think of who would kind of fill out. Who would fill out the other parts of, like, people who were really big in this period? See, the thing about Jennifer Love Hewitt as Julie in this movie is that, like, when I think about, like, who, you know, like, I was thinking, because she was, like, an actress who was, like, very, very popular at this time. And I don't feel like you could put her into PLL because... You don't believe in her at this time as a final girl. You don't believe in her as someone who could survive a Scream movie. You barely believe in her as someone who's going to survive this movie, honestly, because like, despite the fact that they've been being chased by a fisherman, she runs right onto a strange fisherman's boat and, like, doesn't feel alarmed when it's leaving the dock. Like,
I mean, what do you think of Gabrielle Union as Emily?
Oh, I love that.
I think the ages more or less work out there.
I do. I think that would be pretty fantastic. I'm going to say I want to put Eliza Dushku in here, but who would she be in a PLL reboot?
I mean,
maybe she could be Jenna.
She could be Jenna. She could be Allison, or Mona.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that very much.
I don't know who our Aria is, though.
I'll think about that. And get back to you. But yeah, I think it would be, what a time that could have been.
What a time indeed. Yeah. And then thinking about the flip side of that, of like a current remake of I Know What You Did Last Summer. I mean, I know there was that TV show, but I mean, I feel like I can hear Sydney Sweeney yelling, "What are you waiting for?" the way that Jennifer Love Hewitt does. But that's about as far as I've gotten there.
You know who I think is Allison? I think that Alicia Silverstone is Allison.
Ooh, I like that a lot. I think that's really good. So then,
and you know, okay, I'm gonna pitch it, and you can tell me if I'm really off base. But I'm thinking like Dawson's Creek. I'm feeling it. I think that Aria could be Katie Holmes.
You know what? I can see that the kind of artsy sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Katie Holmes. I mean, I was feeling like it was going to be a Dawson's Creek vibe. Is it going to be Katie Holmes? Is it going to be Michelle Williams? But I think Katie Holmes gets it for me.
What do you think of this? Eliza Dushku is Paige.
Oh my gosh. That would be phenomenal.
I like that. Yeah. I think that works. I think it does. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody who was in this movie was like such a big deal in the 90s. Like,
sure.
Jennifer Love Hewitt, she was Party of Five. She had her ill-fated Party of Five spinoff, Time of Your Life. Freddie Prinze Jr., of course, was like the heartthrob in a million teen movies. Sarah Michelle Gellar, of course, Buffy, Cruel Intentions, went on to be in the Scream series as well, where she plays the like movie version of Gale.
Her name actually is Cece in that movie, which is very interesting.
Amazing. You know, Johnny Galecki, who was on Roseanne, more known now for like The Big Bang Theory and other projects like that. Anne H. The only person who I was like, oh, she was in a lot of movies back then, but I haven't seen her lately, is the actress who played Elsa. And when I looked it up, she stopped being in movies because she married tennis player Pete Sampras. And they're still married. So good for her.
Hey,
Pete Sampras, who got murdered in the department store and then didn't have to do movies anymore.
There you go. Yeah. It is this interesting, like, and it feels like this crossing of all these like kind of cinematic universes of, you know, Scream, Cruel Intentions, all of these. There were some unauthorized musicals that were made that I have some weird tendrils into the PLL world, because there was like an unauthorized musical of Cruel Intentions where Janelle Parrish at one point played the Sarah Michelle role. I believe actually the guy who either wrote or directed Cruel Intentions was also did some work for PLL at one point as well. I know that there was an unauthorized version of, I Know What You Did Last Summer. I believe in one of the unauthorized musicals, I can't remember which one, but the actor who plays Nate St. Germain slash Lyndon James showed up.
Wow.
Of course, it goes without saying, if we were doing 90s PLL, Bianca Lawson is still Maya.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Of course. So it really is fun to kind of be right in the heart of the 90s-ness of it all.
Yeah. I will say the one thing that I like about the reveal, even though, as we've discussed, it's a weak reveal, but I like the reveal that what Missy thought was her brother's suicide note was actually a threat. I like the moment when Julie realizes that.
Yeah. What specifically do you like about that moment?
Well, I feel like I just feel like that is a moment when it turns successfully, when it's like, okay, this is what you thought you knew, but it's not what you know. Like, I feel like it does that well, but then the place that it ends up is kind of lackluster.
It's a very PLL move to be like, this note that we thought meant one thing means something else entirely.
Well, and it reminds me of the alleged suicide note that Ian left that was really a bunch of messages, but then that never pays off to anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that a lot. What more do we want to say about this film?
Okay, so I just have a question for you in terms of, like, your moral compass. Who is most to least culpable among these characters, like, for what happens that night? We have Ray, who was driving, but he was driving because Barry, a.k.a. Ryan, was too drunk to drive. He's the one who actually hits the guy and initially thinks that they should dispose of the body, but then has second thoughts down at the water. He can't throw him in. And then he appears to be a person who has remorse about what they've done and tries to visit that on this fake relationship with Missy.
Right.
Okay. So, Ray, how culpable do we feel he is?
I mean, I think he is not the most culpable, but he's close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Julie.
I think she's probably the least. Okay, I think she's the least culpable.
Okay. Because she was not driving.
No.
She is, like, the least on board. Like, she is the one who wants to call the police the most times.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She protests the most. Yeah.
Okay. Helen,
I think she's more culpable than Julie, but less than Ray.
Okay. But she does, in the end, she is one of the ones who pitches the body into the water. But also,
this is true.
It would immediately started attacking her. So.
This is true. Yeah. Okay.
But Barry, I mean, Barry seems like the most culpable person in all of this.
I mean, he's also just, like, the least likable, so I think it's easy to call him the most culpable. He's the most asshole-ish. He's the most kind of entitled of all of them. But yeah, I think he's the one who, like, his sort of lack of foresight is sort of the thing that sets all of this into motion. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting that it's a thing where it's like, they could have just had it be that it was, like, a drunk driving thing, but it's, like, the attempt to avoid a drunk driving situation results in all of this, which is sort of, I guess it's probably a way to, like, make all of the characters, like, culpable, but it's a funny, like, it's very convoluted how it all happens.
Right. And it's also a very PLL thing where they're like, no, we can't call the police because we feel like these are the things that would happen. And, like, we think it's manslaughter. We think it's murder. Like, you know, they're really going a long, long way. in terms of like, no, what we're not going to do is we're not going to call the police. And also like the inability to tell if a dead body is dead or not.
Very PLL. Very PLL.
I think you could actually, I think a lot of this could be explained if Ben were just a vampire. Like that's why he's wearing that giant slicker and hat all the time during the daylight.
That's
fairly unkillable. Like you hit him in the road. You throw him in the water, like somehow he still is not. You rip off his hand, he's gonna be back for the next movie. Like,
yeah. He has like a mystical son. Like, don't they eventually in the third movie, which has Melissa Hastings in it, it ends up becoming like a supernatural thing, right?
Okay, the detail that I remember about the second movie is that they win a radio contest by telling them the incorrect capital of Brazil. Which the first time I saw that movie, I was like, oh my god, the editors of this movie did not even check. And that turns out to be a plot point later on that they give the wrong answer and they still win the contest. I remember that very clearly. And then I remember they're like at this like island resort and everybody is just getting murdered right and left. I don't totally remember if it winds up being supernatural, but it wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't be shocking. It wouldn't be surprising. No. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. It's interesting how this series didn't have the staying power as a franchise, the way that like a Scream or a Halloween, or, you know, Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street did, where it's like, it's funny because like you have, and I actually just read that there's going to be a legacy sequel for, I Know What You Did Last Summer. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say it is 100% because Scream has Neve Campbell and it has Courtney Cox and it has David Arquette. Like, Scream has, like, actors and characters that you are, like, you want to see them again. You want to see them survive again. Unfortunately, in this movie, they went with, like, their two sort of weaker actors to continue on in the sequel.
Yes.
And Freddie Prinze Jr. isn't even in the sequel very much. Like, he gets rolled down a hill or something fairly early in the second film. And then it's, like, he's just, like, you're, like, oh, is he dead from rolling down that hill? Is he alive? We're not sure. And then he's just kind of, like, he, like, I guess wakes up at the bottom of the hill and then, like, goes to the island and, like, helps to rescue, like, right at the end. So he is not even in the second one a whole lot, if memory serves.
Yeah, and it doesn't have like the iconic kind of cast of victims. It also doesn't have like the iconic killer of like a Michael Myers or something.
See, the thing is, at this point in her career, Jennifer Love Hewitt, like on Party of Five, she was not the top banana. She was second banana. She was Bailey's girlfriend. And then she tried to be top banana when she went off into her own spinoff, but that did not work very well. That spinoff did not succeed. And here they were like, we're going to try again. She comes into her own, I think, as she grows older. Like, I feel like she comes into her power, like, you know, when she's doing Ghost Whisperer, when she's doing, yeah. like, she was on, like, a Criminal Minds show or something. Like,
she was on Criminal Minds. Yeah. yeah. She had the client list.
Yeah.
The client list. Yeah.
She's on 911 right now. So, I mean, she has stayed working, like, throughout her career. But I feel like, I feel like there's still too much of the second banana energy in this character. There's still too much of, like, the uncertain teen girl that just doesn't, like, it doesn't translate to, like, leading a slasher franchise.
Yeah, I agree. I think that maybe a Jennifer Love Hewitt a few years later could have anchored the franchise a little bit more successfully.
I would, and, like, if you gave me the chance to see her in, like, a slasher movie now, I would take it in a heartbeat, like, the age that she is now. I think that would be awesome. Yeah.
I agree. Well, this is so fun. Do you have more you would like to say about this movie?
I think we have said a lot about it. I think that, like, you know, when Marlene was a teenager, this is a movie that she might have seen. And I definitely feel that, like, you know, it certainly informs the world of PLL that we come to know and love later on.
I would agree. I would also say that if you want us to talk about more 90s movies, you know, let us know, because they're very fun to discuss. You can, of course, as always, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And then the next time we speak, we are going to be talking, you know, highly controversial. We are going to be talking about Red, White, and Royal Blue, book to screen adaptations. So, you know, if you have thoughts on that before the episode, we would love to hear them. Because there might be a bit of a debate on the podcast.
Very possible.
Yeah. All right. Well, until next time, we hope you have had a great summer. We know what you did, but we love you anyway.
Take care, everyone.